For heaven's sakes, we're on the radio. Hey, you know, isn't that exciting? I mean, you know, being on the radio and all that. I mean, it really is. I mean, before we get started tonight, I would like to warn several of you out there that tonight's program may be one of excruciating, I just thought I'd warn you, but I forgot now what it's going to... Oh, by the way, we have a note here. It says the bird. It's a bird 6 inches in size that lays a 9-inch egg. That's terrible. That's Keith's bad joke. By the way, speaking of bad jokes, this is me, and I'm going to be here for a while, and listen... are you listening really carefully now? I want you to listen very carefully because I have something here of genuine reality. I don't know how better to say it. It's genuine reality. I think it must have been about a month ago that I mentioned that that we get quite a few letters from guys that are in the slam. I mean, you know, guys that are that have been put up on the beach there and hung on a big rack. And, you know, guys sitting around in a can. Well, I got a letter here, and here it is. It's on prison stationery. Now, a lot of people have never seen prison stationery. And it's very official. I've seen all kinds of the prison stationery from many different prisons. And it all looks pretty much the same. It's white paper, and it has black lines on it. The lines are printed very dark, so that when you write on this stationery, you stay right above the line. I don't know what the reason for this is, but this is the way it all looks. It's got these black lines printed on it, and it doesn't look like the kind of line stationery that you got when you were a kid, you know, when you had a tablet. Not at all, because for one thing, the lines don't go all the way to the edge of the paper. Apparently, you can't run your writing all the way out to the edge for some specific reason. And the lines are sort of in the middle of the page, and they have about a quarter of an inch of space between the edge of the page and the end of the line. And then above it, there's always all this official stuff above the actual letter. And it says the name of the prison. See, it's printed very, very big on the top of it. It'll say, like, Joliet State Prison, which is, of course, in Illinois. This is not the one that I'm reading at this time. To protect the guilty, I am I am not going to give you what slam this guy's in. But he writes like all the rest. Now, here's the thing that fascinates me about prison correspondence. Almost every prison correspondent that I have gotten letters from, one, they write... they're very funny. Their letters almost invariably have a real sense of humor. Now, I'm not, don't misunderstand me. Don't extrapolate my remarks here and make it seem like I'm saying that everybody in jail has a sense of humor. I'm saying that the guys who have written me do. See, there's a certain kind of guy. In every given society, there is a guy who is aware. If you take 10, 15, 20 people out of a group of people, there's always one or two guys who have enough of a width, a breadth of vision. In other words, they have enough understanding of human nature, both themselves and the people around them, that they can see the humor of being caught and being thrown in the slam for trying to, you know, for... And they, by the way, concede that they're guilty. They at no point do I get these letters, oh, Shepherd, please get me out, I'm innocent, oh, wow. Not that kind of stuff. Because it's already assumed that they're guilty. I mean, you know. and it's not at all the kind of thing that you always associate with. You remember the Mickey Rooney prison pictures when Pat O'Brien was the warden, and... Mickey Rooney was always saying, you're going to let me out, I'm innocent, yeah, you know that business. No, very different. And he writes this letter to me, and at the top, there is this, the letterhead is very big. It starts out, it says, let's say, Joliet State Prison. That's the heading of it. And then underneath it is all the information that you have to have. You see it all there? It's all kinds of little tiny type, and it says stuff like visiting information. Visits for inmates whose last names begin with A, B, or C will be on Monday. Visits for inmates whose last names begin with D, E, F, G, or H will be on Tuesday. Visitors for inmates whose last names begin with I, J, K, L, or M will be on Wednesday, etc. Down to, then it says at the bottom, it says unsentenced inmates allowed two visitors. Each visitor allowed one visit per week. Sentenced inmates, these are guys that are guilty, allowed four visitors. Each visitor allowed one visit every 2 weeks. Not more than two visitors allowed on the same day. For your information, inmates can purchase cigarettes, candy, toilet articles, etc. from the commissary. Send money orders made out to the inmate. Do not send packages. I can understand why. But anyway, here's what he says. Now, all set now to hear what his opening lines are in this letter? I'm sure he won't mind me commenting on what he says. He says, Dear Mr. Shepherd, now this is from the Slam. It's on Slam Stationery. He's even got his number and everything. You have to put your number down, you see, on the top of the stationery. And his number is a very official number. It says, Dear Mr. Shepherd, would you please send me your free booklet entitled The Seven Deadly Sins and How to Get More Out of Them? I believe, and I try to know myself, both my assets and liabilities, realizing that I have a talent for greed and fully agreeing with Holy Writ that talents should be put to use rather than buried, I desire counsel so as to more fully realize my God-given talent for greed. Hence my interest in your booklet. Realizing that I do not have to send 25 cents in coin to Washington for the booklet, I wish to commend both yourself and your station for your sense of commitment to public service, rising above all commercial considerations. I am in the SWAM on a bank robbery charge, and I feel that had I had to a higher degree the education that you offer in your booklet, in greed in particular, and it's in applications, I would not be in my present circumscribed circumstances. I remain. Now, there's a guy with a sense of humor. And he says, then at the bottom, he puts a postscript. He says, on a more serious note, I'd like to say that I've been here now 6 months. And he says, as things can be pretty difficult at times, he said, I have one thing I look forward to every day. Your show in the evening is something that I just wait all day for. He says, why? Because you are just an honest man speaking his mind. Now, that's fascinating. No, that's the first time that I've ever had of all the letters that I get from people. What's that? How does he hear it? Well, I suppose they allow him some kind of radio in jail. I don't know. Apparently they do. From the various letters that I've gotten from the prisoners that I've heard from in the past, they do have, it's a kind of a prison system. In other words, the prison pipes shows or radio into their cells for a certain number of hours a day. At least that was one guy wrote me a letter and explained this to me, where they had a switch, and they could switch to two or three different stations. And by coincidence, ours was one of them. And he says that all the prisoners are so hungry. He says they don't want music. He says they're so hungry to hear a voice from somebody talking on the outside that this is far more important than anything the Stones can ever say, you know. And these guys are listening, man. And but isn't it interesting, though, that a guy who is definitely in jail says this line? He's the only person of all the of thousands of letters I've received over the years from people about one thing or another. He's the only one that has actually said that specific thing. He says, I dig your show. He says, I look forward to it because it is just an honest man speaking his own mind. Now, that's very interesting, coming from a guy who's in jail. Now, he says, also, you want to hear more of what he says? He says, also, admittedly, you have quite a style, but far more important is the fact that you have something substantial to say, often satirically presented, Still, you are very serious in almost everything you do. He says, particularly in your satire. That's quite true. You know, most people think that satire shows that you're not serious. And as a matter of fact, it's quite the opposite. Any great satirist is even more serious than the guy who writes the resounding editorial. We here in the editorial office feel blah, 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 blah. And he makes that point. He says that the fact that when you're being satirical about a thing, you're actually being more serious about it than the kvetchers. You hear a lot of those on Barry's show, by the way. Barry Farber. Oh, yeah, the guys are saying, you mean to tell me, Barry, that you can read on page 422 in my book, The Eagle Screams Over Brooklyn, that I wrote in conjunction with my marvelous wife, Rhoda. In our book, we show how the city of New York, and they go on and on and on, and it's assumed by people that they're serious. That is a very, very shaky assumption. They could only be pompous. Don't confuse pomposity with seriousness. But the pompous are around us. And incidentally, being pompous is quite a career. I think we ought to honor pomposity with an actual designation as a specific human art form. In other words, we use the term comedy, we use the term humor, we use the term tragedy. People will say Charlie is a tragedian, Fred is a comedian, Fred is a satirist, Voltaire is a satirist, and so forth. Why not say Fred Appelrod is a pomposian or a pompositarian, and he's appearing tonight on the Barry Farber Show. But pomposity is really an interesting thing because it's probably one of the most consistent qualities that we have. That's the one thing that I hold against the New York Times, which I enjoy immensely. I love to read the Times. But they are pomposity. Oh, they are so pompous. They really are pompous. And my old friend Gay Talese, who wrote the book, by the way, about the Times, a long time ago, when he was working for the Times, he used to come over and sit around here at the studio. We used to talk about that tremendous pomposity. And you can see it in little ways. For example, have you noticed the radio listings in the Times? Oh, they're very pompous. And this is WOR New York, speaking of pomposity. And would you please hit the dough button, please, friend? Hit it high there. That's it. Here we go. Here we go. I'm sitting with more
words and music about Miller High Life beer.
Don't you have
words like hearty, robust, deep down good? Words like gold, tall,
rich, delicious,
cold,
deeply satisfying,
thirst quenching.
Yeah.
Beer words like refreshing.
Refreshing.
Foamy.
Yet mild.
Another Miller. Words like Miller makes it
Miller
right.
Makes it right.
In bottles, in cans. Words you can never forget.
Never, never,
like
never.
Miller High Life.
You met another. It was gone.
Silly way to earn a living. This is ridiculous.
And my Mary, I'm extremely cool tonight. You notice that? That's because I spent 2.5 hours just before I came in here staring intently at Rosetta's special psychedelic window. And, of course, it put my head to sleep. And if you'd like to blow your mind right across 46th Street, friends, I would like you to stand for about an hour and a half in front of Rosetta's special psychedelic window. That's a 75 West 45th Street. In fact, there's a whole crowd of guys now, right now, standing in front of the window, stoned. Sickening sight. And that's Rosetta's, New York's fantastic electrical supermarket. They got it all there. You want to buy yourself a little folding electric chair? They've got it all there, friends. Almost anything you want. That's at Rosetta's, and their address at 75 West 45th Street. She is quite a name. You ought to be down there someday when old Rosie shows up for sale. I'll tell you, that place is sickening. They were busted twice last year alone. Had a big party there. Well, anyway, it's Rosetta, 75 West 45th Street, 79 Chambers Street, and the new Rosetta at 73 Murray Street, two blocks west of the City Hall. And they all have free parking. Hello, test. I seem to have a hum here tonight. I want to change this. Hello. Hello. There. That's better. Okay. Yeah. Am I boring you about this? No, it's very interesting. I'm going to go on with this. That the pomposity, I think, is one of the great human talents. And, of course, no other animal has any talent, actually. We're the only creature that has any specific talent. Yeah, talent is a human thing. Well, no, an animal eating you is only doing what he does. No, that's not talent. Talent is something that has nothing whatsoever to do with the maintenance of life. In other words, a guy is not going to survive one way or the other by drawing a picture on the cave. It's abstract. Talent is an abstraction. If you take a high jumper, he's jumping purely for jumping's sake. He's not jumping high to try to save his life or jumping to reach the grapes like the fox did. He's just jumping. So that's a talent. And it's part of the abstract thing that man is. It's rarely seen where one impala will say to another impala, "Hey, Fred, let's see if I can jump over that rock, man, and I'll bet you can't make it." Although they may do it, we don't know. But the thing is that man has made a whole structure out of the abstraction of jumping and running and throwing and painting and writing music and all this stuff, which has to do with talent. But I think he's also done that with pomposity. Although, I think it's a genuine talent. I'm not putting it down. Oh, yes! A truly pompous creation, I mean truly, carried all the way out, can be highly entertaining. And also extremely educational. Because pomposity, I believe it. I think pomposity it can be, because you see, pomposity is often confused among people's minds for seriousness. The more pompous you are, the more serious you are. You hear these poor, sad interview shows. Like the other day, I heard an interview show where this nice lady was interviewing an artist who had written a booklet entitled "The Future of Mankind and How, in the Following 15 Pages, I Show That Man Can Produce Far Greater Creatures on the Face of the Earth Than He Is Now Today." And, of course, our guest today, Charles W. Abercrombie III, that famous artist who has written this magnificent book called "How Man Can Create a Better World," will be with us for the next 20 minutes. I'd like to say that beforehand that I want to thank all of you for inviting me on the program. And as I was saying to Dog Hammarskjöld one day, many years ago, just after they had considered me for the Nobel Prize, and just before Bertrand Russell remarked to me, and on the occasion, of course, of Norman Mailer's ascension to the throne, that I said, "That's so beautiful." Don't I sound like one of those people? And she said, "Well, now, do you consider the space program a worthwhile effort on the part of mankind to extend his horizons and make his world a better world?" I'm glad you asked that question. As I was saying the other day to President Nixon, I was saying to Mr. Nixon that in our considered view, Would you please give me a little mood music for that, please? And I say, of course, I'm glad, and in consideration for all the other things which mankind are attempting to do. And in my book, I outline very clearly that the course that the man, in particular Western man, has been pursuing, the Museum of Modern Art, the Metropolitan Thomas Hoving and Hawke, Regina Kong, Arthur Heckscher, and I are moving. But it is kind of fun. By the way, speaking of pomposity, there is no art form that knows pomposity like the world of the people who make the magic commercials. We have Dotson with us tonight, one of our sponsor types. And by the way, this is a good time to do it because, spring not too far away, and a lot of people think in terms of buying a car before it gets too bad in July when everything's blowing up out on the Long Island Expressway. I would like to recommend, before you do that, think carefully before you make a decision. I would suggest you look at the new Datsun, which is going to be at the big automobile show here in town. Of course, if you haven't seen the Datsun, you should do that anyway. And if you do know anything about excellent cars at this time, the Datsun is probably one of the best buys in the world, dollar for dollar, and undoubtedly one of the safest cars ever built. Fast, clean, and it's a fine little car. Before you make any decisions, see Datsun. Hey, we have a special announcement. I am going to be live as a big, fat, speckled bird live next Friday. And it's going to be good to be live. You know, nothing like being alive one day out of the year. By the way, I'm always live, sort of. Next Friday, February 20th, 8 p.m., Newark College of Engineering in Newark, New Jersey. And we're going to be there. We had a couple of shows there already in the past, and we always have a great time over there. I enjoy engineers. That's a special world, and I began college when I began school. I was a pre-engineering student, and so I appreciate things like log desitrig slide rules. Nothing like a good log line. You notice I didn't finish engineering. I went in another direction. February 20th, 8 p.m., Newark College of Engineering. I repeat, February 20th, next Friday, 8 p.m., Newark College of Engineering in Newark, New Jersey, of course. All seats are $2.50, and you better get on the stake because they just have a limited number that are available outside of the college. If you'd like to attend this little soiree, you send a check or money order, $2.50 per ticket, to Box 55. I repeat, Box 55, Newark College of Engineering. And you spell Newark, N-E-W-W-A-R-K-K-E. Newark College of Engineering, Newark, New Jersey, 07 102, zip code. Send stamped, self-addressed envelope and your check. And we're in business. That's next Friday at 8 p.m., February 20th, Newark College of Engineering, Newark, New Jersey. We just had to get that out of the way. Yeah, now talk. Now here's an example of pomposity in action. If you've ever taken a look at the radio section of the New York Times, now the only, they'll have a radio section that say what's happening on radio today. Then they'll have all the music programs listed, see. Then underneath it, it says talk, sports, and that's about it. Talk, sports, special events. Talk, remember, talk, sports, special events. And they have all these shows listed. Now, the only shows they list are shows on which somebody is being interviewed. In other words, if one of those people, that's a fascinating thing, if one of those people who is being interviewed were to get his own show, it would then not be listed. That's fascinating. So I'm not even listed in the Times. I don't exist as far as the Times radio section is concerned. And what's that? I can't hear you, but it's all right. But it's not even listed, see? But now, I suppose that shows, of course, that the Times will only recognize radio as long as they're interviewing somebody from outside of radio. In short, radio itself is below notice. Oh, I've seen this. Now, that's in spite of the fact, of course, that as a writer, let's forget radio. As a writer, I've had four or five national humor and satire awards, you know, a few other. Oh, yeah, I'm being perfectly immodest to you. Oh, sure. No, it's true. Of course I'm being pompous. Now, the point is this. No. You notice the only time anybody makes any ground in this world is when he does get pompous. Now I'm trying to tell the what I suppose you can say is the lesson of this. Not only a lesson, I suppose you can say that the moral of the little tale I'm telling you tonight, friends, be pompous. Be pompous, man. I'll tell you the most pompous slogan in our time is all the news that's fit to print. That is a pompous slogan. And you notice how far it's carried them. Oh, man, further than anybody. Now, pomposity, of course, is important. Now on the other hand, carrying that idea a little bit further, now, when you are pompous, now here, I'll show you an example of what I consider pompous people. You want to know who I think is pompous? Well, I think a John Kenneth Galbraith is one of the most pompous men I've ever run into. Now, I've read some of Galbraith. Galbraith really does believe that the world revolves around him. That there are big spokes going out from him, and they revolve around him. Well, that's fine. I mean, that's great. Now, you notice that the pompous tend to drift together. Because they're all convinced, of course, that pomposity must be protected from the outside world. Constantly getting shots and little arrows. Now, I can name, you want to know some other pompous people? Well, I think, pomposity can be both right and left. It's not really a matter of political. For example, let's face it, William Buckley is pompous. But he's pompous with style. He is. He's funny. And his pomposity, he finds, obviously, now I don't know Buckley, nor do I agree with him politically, but obviously Buckley finds his own pomposity funny. And that's why he'll never be taken seriously. Genuinely seriously. If you know, there's a big difference between being popular and being taken seriously. And so a guy like Galbraith, who really doesn't think of himself as pompous, oh no, he never would, is the ultimate in that, because he doesn't think it. If you think you're pompous, you're not. If you think you're pompous, you are not. It's like insanity. If you believe that you're insane, the chances are, friends, you ain't. I mean, it's as simple as that, and yet complex, that the pompous can only be pointed out by others, you see. In other words, you're never going to hear anybody say, well, I'm pompous, of course. If he does say that, he wants you to say, oh, no, certainly not, Abathwaite. You're certainly not pompous. You're of course, you know, it's true that at times you get a little ponderous, but not pompous. Of course not. Well, of course, I'm glad you say that, but, the pompous, are people who really, believe, and incidentally, part of pomposity, I think, being pompous, is to have a complete disdain, really, for the others. Pomposity is an offshoot of a feeling of superiority. That to feel superior to other people is one of the reasons, one of the prime requisites to be pompous. If you really do feel superior. Now, I can name others. I mean, there's a lot of others around that have this kind of pomposity. Of course, New York specializes in it. I think the city of New York, and I've lived here long enough to be somewhat of a commentator on the city and its mores and the people who are in it, and I've spent some time in the various salons, and I've been around the various artistic and non-artistic types. I've been around a lot of the people who you probably read about in your papers, but I find that one bond sort of runs through most of them, and that's a profound feeling of disdain for the man on the street. And yet they will constantly use that character as part of their liturgy, as part of their liturgy of what's good for the people, what isn't good for the people, and so forth. It's very interesting. I've always felt that that would make a good subject for a fine play. And of course, some playwrights have written plays on it. Racine, for example, wrote a play on based on pomposity. There have been several plays written about the French, particularly, have written plays that deal with the whole idea of pomposity. During the Reformation, there were plays written about it. But today, of course, one of the most pompous people in our world is the playwright. So he has trouble recognizing pomposity. And we find that back in the days of probably it's kind of surprising, you know, to realize that people like Shakespeare and Mozart and even people all the way on up through the early 19th century, that being a writer, you never thought of yourself as being particularly better than other people. It was just a thing you could do, like other guys could make nice shelves, and other people could make good shoes. It was a trade, in other words. Being a writer really was a trade. And he didn't think of himself, well, did you know this is true? Sure. As a matter of fact, one of the things that made Beethoven a revolutionary in his time was that he insisted that the composer was an artist, and not a craftsman who merely covered paper with a certain number of notes and stuff that were ordered by the customer. Mozart considered writing a craft. It was a thing he did, and for that reason, he was exceedingly modest about it, because he didn't think it was anything particularly remarkable that he could write great music. No, he didn't, and he was very very modest about it. Of course, as time went on, though, the artist concept began to evolve until ultimately the ego of the artist became overweening, until he felt most artists today have a messianic quality about them. They feel that they're specially touched people, and that their duty is to lead the others out of the wilderness. Now, that's a fascinating development, really. And so, in the days of the playwrights back in the 19th century and earlier, the playwright was really just a part of the working theater, and he looked upon his world as a world of craftsmanship. That his job was to turn out a play by next Wednesday, which he sat down and did. He could do that well. And if he made people laugh, it was great. If they cried, it was what he wanted to do. But it was his job, you see. And so today, though, due to all kinds of changes in attitude and so on, the artist has become today above criticism, actually. No, the being an artist makes you automatically one of the magic people. And as such, now you can criticize his specific work. Now remember that. I didn't say he's beyond criticism. You can criticize his specific work. But you never criticize his honesty. You never criticize the fact that he could be just a dildock like everybody else. You never admit that. And particularly in the theater. So today, you rarely see a play, for example, that criticizes pomposity. If it does, it will criticize a specific character who's always in another field. So if a theater man is going to write a show about the phoniness of the theatrical world, what will he do? He'll always write this expose on a TV entertainer. It's never a theater man. Oh, no. Oh, no. Because we all know they're beautiful and true and good. And so so each field tends to satirize the other fields, but its own field is sacrosanct. So you'll never find a cartoonist saying about another cartoonist, oh, this guy is a fake, he's a fraud. They may argue back and forth with each other about contracts and about agents and so forth, but they will never say, come on, he's just turning out this stuff by the yard. They're very careful of that. So pomposity has a tendency to create its own inbuilt protective system. Now, before we do, I would like to recommend, if you like that kind of food, I mean, if you really like great food, you try the Great Shanghai, which is one of the really fine Chinese restaurants in New York. It's been around for a long time, at 103rd and Broadway. You just get on the IRT, and the subway comes right up next to the chopstick washer, right in the kitchen there. You just walk out and start scoffing, that's all. They'll start stuffing you. They don't ask no questions. You can come just reeling in there, your mouth hanging open. And it's 103rd Broadway. It's the Great Shanghai. And they have this big Chinese brunch, which is on Sunday from 11 until 3. For $2.50, you can eat all you want. You know, there's a lot more to this letter, and tonight I felt like, you know, talking a little bit about certain things that have bothered me personally in very plain language about so many of the developments of our time. And I think some of the evils of our time are rarely discussed, because the very evils that concern me are evils which the people who generally do discussing of things are most guilty of. People taking themselves so seriously. The one quality that has always bothered me, that I've always been afraid of when I run into it in people, is the messianic complex, the messiah complex. And this has become a very, very definite part of our world today. There are more messiahs that are running around and who really seriously feel that they are incapable of being wrong. You see, this is part of the messiah complex. A messiah complex is not the same, you know, as a man who may passionately believe in something and fight for it. So don't confuse what I'm saying here. Merely because I'm talking about the messiah, I'm sure a lot of people are going to get bugged and say, what do you mean? Aren't you concerned? Aren't you involved? And so forth. Yes, as a matter of fact, I am. But you see, the messiah is quite often not involved with what he appears to be fighting for, but he's involved in his own messiahship. Well, that's important to remember. And this is very important, to be the leader is more important to many people than to what they are leading. In fact, we've had the case of several politicians recently who have gotten tremendous applause, who suddenly realized that it's easy to be against things. It's easy to get people to follow you if you're on the side of the angels. And if you keep your mouth shut and don't show that you're also on the side of several devils, you may very well go to the top. Now, I'm not talking about anybody who's in or out. I'm just saying that this is an old problem, and it's one that constantly is with us. Now, I think that our day, due to the fact that we do have these various mediums at our control, television, radio, film, and so forth, this is going to be probably the greatest heyday that the pompous have ever known. The minute a pompous man, especially if he has a little style, he's able to keep his audience merely because he has a few forensic tricks, that the minute that he discovers that it's possible to be on every radio interview show, it's possible to be on every television show within an hour, and be heard by 28 million people, pomposity then tends to breed its own continuing, overpowering skein of success. And nobody argues with them. I've noticed that the more the pompous get on various TV and radio shows, they're rarely argued with. They're treated as if their pomposity is in itself a badge of authenticity. The fact they've written a book, that's very important. When you've written a book, you're automatically in with the pompous. Or they've put together a movie, or they've written a cockamamie play. That is and especially if you've written something that's involved in the theater, because everybody who's an interviewer, everybody who's on television, thinks of himself as part of the world of the theater. And so if you've done something, yes, honey, I see it, if you've done something in the world of the theater, then automatically you have shown that you're qualified, because the man feels that he himself is qualified. So the only people that the theater people or the writing people are constantly attacking are people outside of their field. You rarely read a brilliantly written book attacking, say, Norman Mailer. Why not? You'll never read or see a cartoon brilliantly executed attacking, say, Jules Pfeiffer. Well, because it's all part of that sort of an umbrella of a protection each person gives to another. It's kind of like doctors. You rarely get a doctor to discuss the ineptitude of another doctor. Well, you're rarely going to get a playwright to attack another playwright. Now, he'll attack somebody in television or writing, but never another playwright. And so it goes on and on. In other words, what I'm saying is that the attacking elements of our society have today gotten to the point where they will protect themselves. And that could be a fascinating, it could wind up with some very interesting problems in the future. Have you noticed that the only people that are right in our society are always cartoonists or playwrights? Or songs, people who write folk songs? Fascinating. Then the obvious thing then is to elect a folk singer, a cartoonist, and a playwright to run the government. Then you're going to have something interesting. And of course, we'll get Laurence Olivier to represent us in the United Nations, because he's such an experienced king, you know. He's played at least 10 kings in his time.
If you smoke, the best thing you can do is stop. But you already know that. The next best thing is to cut.